Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron discusses plans for a cozy night in for Valentine's Day. He speaks with a local board games expert about which ones can bring a relationship closer and which ones to avoid. He also sits down with a local mixologist to learn how to make a delicious cocktail at home for you or that special someone. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a look into a brand new theater company debuting their first production this weekend. I speak with the creative force behind Undead Theater Company about their adaptation of the classic vampire story, Carmilla. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron. This weekend is Valentine's Day, and while many couples will be spending a night out at a restaurant or hitting the theaters for the newest rom-com, we at Hometown Alaska thought it would be fun to plan the perfect date night in. Going out is great and all, but it can be stressful and expensive. So why not put on some clothes that are actually comfortable and play a card game or make a new and exciting cocktail? And if that all sounds like a date night that is more your speed, then you're going to love my guest today, because later on the show, I'll be speaking with a local mixologist who will be sharing the perfect Valentine's Day drink. But right now in the studio, I'm happy to welcome back Andy Rogers. He's the owner of Tier 1 Cards and Games here in Anchorage. Andy, great to have you back on the show.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, Andy, I want to give credit where it's due. The idea for today's show came from you. You sent me an email.
Going back a bit, yeah.
It was last year around this time. It was Valentine's Day. And you said, wouldn't it be fun to talk about card games or board games for couples, you know, in the theme of Valentine's Day? So why do you think playing games together can either create or improve a romantic connection? What is it about them that works with this theme?
Yeah, I think it works with a lot of connections, not just romantic ones, but certainly that as well. One of the things I think our store competes with most is easy, convenient distractions. And many times these days that's, you know, online and screen-based.
Yeah.
So I think just at a base level, you know, outside of, you know, learning about each other and building relationships that way, just getting unplugged and interacting face-to-face, speaking to each other instead of, you know, maybe not at all or just near each other, but speaking with each other, you know, making eye contact, making shared decisions. Games provide an opportunity to do that may be starting to lack in some couples.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Strengthens all kinds of relationships. I like that. But speaking of couples playing games together, do you and your wife play games together?
We do. Getting my wife to sit still long enough to play a board game is sometimes a challenge. If I can rope one or both of the kids into it, I have a higher likelihood of success. But her idea of a game usually involves technical skill and a ball and a bunch of sweating and lots of running, preferably uphill in a mountain if possible. So we can get her play a board game, but we do lots of stuff together, but usually outdoor activities as a full family.
And I have seen lots of games that are doing this whole active play thing where you have like something you throw to each other or bounce off of something.
Yep.
So I'm guessing you have those games in your store.
Yeah,
so
we have some of those, but I mean, start even more general than that. I think sports are a wonderful game to play either as a couple or as a family.
That's true. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. being active is just wonderful and helps with all other aspects of your life too. But if you're looking for something to do a little more sedate or a little more indoors, there's a whole camp of dexterity games that are, you can think of like air hockey or pinball or what's the one where you spin the little soccer guys? Completely forgot the name of that thing.
Foosball. So Ammon came into the room and told us what it was to save us from our embarrassment.
There's lots of physical games like that, but even board game versions of those. There's board game versions of pinball, and there's a wonderful Danish game called Clask. It's one of the games that we always have set up in the store. In fact, we just never take it down. But it's basically air hockey with magnets.
Right.
You use a little magnetic controller to bop a ball around, and there's these little magnetic pucks that you want to dodge and avoid because they get stuck to your controller and you lose points that way. There's a wonderful little game called Ice Cool where you have these little Weeble Wobble penguins. And so Weeble Wobbles, they wobble, but they don't fall down. They're like a little bowling pin shaped piece that's weighted toward the bottom. And when you flick them, they kind of wobble around, and if you're good at it, and I'm not, but my kids destroy me at it, they can flick them around corners and through multiple doors, and you're these little penguins dodging the hall monitors in the school. So you're running around trying to catch fish as a penguin in the school, and the hall monitors are trying to catch you and take your ID card. So, but it's really just an excuse to flick these pieces around at each other.
Oh, sounds very satisfying.
So there's lots of like dexterity games like that.
Totally, yeah. And I can vouch for that class game. You told me about it last time we spoke, and I ended up getting it, and everyone in my house loves it.
Yep.
So who's the better class player, you or your wife?
I've played a lot of Clask.
That's very nice way to say you. Okay.
If you come into the shop and I demo it, I'll probably play left-handed.
Well, Andy, I want to talk about some more card games and board games.
Yeah.
I want to get into some of them specifically. I know there are a lot of two-player games out there, but
there
a lot of them I could see actually causing like a fight instead of a fun date night. So what are some great games for couples?
Great question. So two-player games, most games are like 2 to 4 players, 2 to 5 players, 2 to 6 players, sometimes many, many more
mm-hmm.
when you start to get into social games. So almost any game can be a two-player game. And I'm guessing we'll get to this later. Many of those games you can also play solo. And we actually, during Valentine's Day specifically, sell a lot of solo play games because not everyone has a partner or a romantic partner.
Sure, yeah.
So so people are looking for something to do on their own. But knowing your opponent is probably valuable. I would say that if you have a highly competitive partner and you know gets really invested in something and needs to win, they might like games that they know real well and can play real well and might not respond as well to a new game that they might not know what's going on and, you know, may feel frustrated with a first run or two until they get their feet under them and have a chance at winning. A co-op game might be better to play for a couple's night with somebody like that. So their competitive itch is directed at beating the mechanics of the game that's trying to defeat them and doing that in collaboration with you rather than like a more combative experience.
Right.
If that isn't, you know, a challenge with the relationship, there's a lot of the classic games you can play, you know, chess, checkers, most of the card games that people grew up with, Rummy, Canasta, any of those kinds of things. Oftentimes you can just pick up a deck of cards. You might even have one in the house already and have any number of games that you can play.
Yeah. So just talking about like some newer games, like I think yeah. a lot of people know those games that you listed. What are some newer games maybe on the co-op side that people could play together? Because that is kind of still, I feel
yeah.
like, a newer concept to people, cooperative games.
Yeah, and you can find examples of this going back, but we're certainly in game manufacturing and development leaning into co-op play more than we have, but puzzles are a fine example of co-op that have just been around for forever. Let's sit down and figure out how to build this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of good puzzle games. In fact, I think some of the cool, as you mentioned, newer games like the whole Unlock series and Exit series are basically escape room, the
right.
board game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're co-op. They're really well made. Some of them are very small and travel well because they have kind of little miniature versions that are like a pack of, you know, 6 crayons, those little packs that we used to get when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that size. And then they have like, you know, full box ones that you can play through as well. Sometimes they're augmented by an app that you can run on your phone that has a timer or maybe a system of clues, or once you figure out the, you know, solve whatever step in the mystery is you're working on, you enter that in and it advances you. So those are kind of cool cooperative games. And then there's this whole suite of campaign or story or legacy, there's different titles for them, games where they're meant to be played over time. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of think of like an episodic series. So we're going to play this Pandemic or Arkham Horror, the card game, or something that where the campaign is going to stretch over 8 or 9 play sessions. You can certainly enjoy an evening just doing one of those and kind of learning the game together. But if it's something that you found you enjoyed and you want to keep doing it, and maybe it's a weekly thing or once a month we do this, either as a couple or with more friends, whatever, those are great ways to do that because you kind of reveal additional information as you play through the various scenarios of the campaign, and you know your character might advance. So you'll unlock new skills that help you solve increasingly, you know, challenging or difficult problems.
Right.
But those are much bigger games than, you know, sitting down to a cooperative, collaborative, let's solve this puzzle type game.
Are there games that you just no, for sure, would be a terrible idea to play on a date night? Like, I've seen some certain games that bring out the worst in people.
I always think Monopoly is the worst game to play in any situation.
Horrible game, no matter what. Yeah,
ruin families, yep. Ruin evenings.
Yep, burn them all.
All that said, we sell an awful lot of Monopoly. Scooby-Doo, sure. Monopoly. The Office Monopoly.
Yeah.
Regular old Monopoly.
What is the best, like, fast-paced card game you could recommend for someone that doesn't want to read a bunch of rules and doesn't want to explain a bunch of rules to their, you know, to their partner?
Yeah. You can easily go back to classics like Uno.
Mm-hmm.
You learn it instantly and you're off and playing. There's some cool new twists on games like that. There's a game called Push that's basically Uno with a little tiny fun gambling component where you push your luck. Push your luck is kind of a regular recurring theme in a lot of board games where mm-hmm. you can spend a little bit of your resources to get something that's pretty good. But if you give just a little bit more, it might be better for you. So there's a game called Push that's basically Uno with this dice that you roll. And the more you push your luck, the higher the rewards, but also the more you get to lose your advantage and empower your opponents. It's fine to play with two, but a lot of those social games, I think, you do better with families, larger mm-hmm. groups.
Yeah. You do some Valentine's Day themed things in your shop, Tier 1 Card Game. What are those things, and when can people check them out?
Yeah. Well, we certainly sell games that are, you know, good for couples, and some of them are even themed around romance, although those honestly don't do any better around Valentine's Day than they do at any other point of the year.
Oh.
But some of the more interesting themed things we do is we do Build Your Own Bouquets for Valentine's Day, where you get, you know, these nice Tier 1, like, pint glass style vase things where you can put skewers in it and put booster packs of your favorite trading card game or, you know, a little card game or maybe a miniature and some paints from your significant other's favorite war game or something and put those together. And they have nice pente stones where they're all kind of themed around the colors of whatever products you chose. So you can build those up and they display real nice and people appreciate them.
Well, what about have you ever thought of hosting a couples night in your shop before to get people to get to know some like speed dating style or just like couples yeah. playing games together in your store?
I don't think we've ever talked about doing a speed dating thing. Mm-hmm. We have couples in all the time. Couples do come in to play games for any of the card game events that we run, you know, basically 7 days a week, but also for some of the specialty events. But I don't think we've ever looked at speed dating. I might have to run that by the team. Like, yeah. How would this go?
Uh-huh.
I think it would probably be pretty well received.
Yeah, there's a lot of fast-paced games out there. I think the one that we've been playing a lot in my family is Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. I'm sure you've heard of this. I think a lot of people have heard of that one, if they have kids especially.
Yeah, we sell a lot of the variously themed Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza games.
Right, and that's so people lay a card down, they say the animal.
Yeah.
One card at a time, Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, repeat, and then you slap it when you pull the card of the animal that you said.
Yeah.
And then there's these various other creatures that are in there. They have to do like embarrassing like movements for and then slap the card. So
do you play two player or with?
Usually 4-player, a whole family. Yeah. Yeah. And I just cannot win to save my life. My reflexes are not what they used to be, apparently.
There's so many social games like that that you can play 2-player.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah,
and totally. It can be a good and even like intimate way to learn about each other. I think many of them scale up better, though. Like one game that we sell a lot of at Valentine's Day is a game called Love Letter, which is a great game. Hmm. It's a wonderful game. And it's a hidden information game. Everyone has a card. And it gives them a role. And you're trying to suss out who has what role and, you know, earn as much points as you can by keeping your role secret. And there's a whole suite of games like this. And you can play it two-player, but it's better at four, it's better at five, it's better at six. But just because of the name of it, and it's got this nice little kind of red velvety pouch that the cards go in, so it looks real nice. Yeah, a lot of the social games, I think, scale up better. Any of the kind of murder mystery type games.
Right. You're playing a role and trying to figure out who is who.
There are games like that, like Codenames.
Oh, that's a great game.
Yeah. It's kind of like Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. It's just associations, right? And you're trying to work with a partner to Codenames Duet anyway, the two-player version of it. Mm-hmm. You're trying to work together to guess the right card associated with a word to find these agents. It's a wonderful little game, and there's a few of them like that that I think really do well together as two-player games.
Well, Andy, you kind of hinted at this earlier. If you're in the early stages of your relationship with someone, what can playing games with that person or finding out what their favorites are tell you about them? Like if someone does love Monopoly, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
I want to give these people a voice.
You know? It's like, man, I wonder if I could travel with this person. Maybe we should do a travel-themed game before we commit to like backpacking through Europe. I think you can learn a lot interacting with people. There's a lot of guessing games. Again, these are social games that are oftentimes played in larger settings. There's lots of truth or dare style, would you rather style games that have a prop, essentially, cards pre-made for you, where you could do that with a couple. And I'm sure you would learn a lot of really interesting things about each other. Whereas opposed to something like a game like, you know, Yahtzee or something, where you're just rolling dice and recording the score, might not do as much. But you might see how competitive they are.
Yeah, right.
How entertained or irritated they get from random happenstance. Do you have games that are, you think you really get a window into somebody's soul when you play them?
We did discover one recently called Sussed. You were talking about sussing information out.
Yeah.
And this is a how well do you know this person kind of game. So that's the kind of game that could potentially backfire. Like maybe you're together with your partner for 20 years and you get all the answers wrong.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to guess what they would say. So you're given a situation. They read like, you know, I am a ghost living in a library and I have all of eternity to read what genre of books, and you're supposed to guess what the person would say. Like you have like three answers you could pick and you try and get it right. So it is very satisfying when you're like, yes, I picked everything correctly because I know you so well, but it's also embarrassing if you get it wrong.
If you get it wrong, it is.
And if you've known them a long time. But so Andy, you mentioned it earlier, not everyone's going to have a significant other to play board games with, if that's what they did want to do in the first place. What about solo games? You were talking about some really good solo games. I feel like those are also coming out.
Yeah, and I think just kind of an interest in playing even multiplayer games solo, I think is a little bit more mainstream than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some games that play very well by yourself. In fact, my wife's gone for the bulk of February. She'll be at the Olympics as a physical therapist there. So there's this game I've had my eye on. It has the reputation of being the best solo play game out there right now. I have my doubts. I have opinions, but I want to give this a chance. It's called Too Many Bones. All the game pieces are like weighted poker chips. So it's this tiny little box, but it's super heavy. So solo play games are something I have interest in. And there's many good ones. I think a lot of the co-op games that you would be playing with a partner also play really well solo. So a lot of the, earlier we mentioned Unlock, a whole suite of games, there's probably 30 different versions of themed around Unlocked at this point, exits that way too. So a lot of those puzzle games do real well there. But also the any of the campaign style games, it's almost nice if you're playing those on your own because it can be hard to get multiple people together, you know, even if you live you and your spouse under the same roof, life gets busy and like you don't always just have, you know, 2 or 3 hours to sit down on a recurring basis to do an entertainment. So a lot of those play well solo too.
Well, Andy, before I let you go, I was going to ask for my last question, what are you doing for Valentine's Day this year? But I know you already answered that. You're going to be playing Bones, the solo game, while your wife is
We'll be watching to see Olympics. If we can see Mom on TV while we'll play some solo
That's
games.
That's great. So, well, my last question in that case will be, what are your top three desert island games? So, and by that, I mean you're stranded on the desert island with your wife, couples game, a game that you're going to play together, and you only get three to play ever again.
Yeah. Well, given how non-board gaming my wife is, it may be some of those solo play games. But she does have favorite games. She likes chess. She likes Scrabble. She's Slovak, so she cheats at Scrabble. She comes up with these words that have no vowels in them. It's all consonants.
Ah, well, that is cheating. Wait, are you allowed to use? You're probably allowed to use Slovakian words if she is. But you just
don't, I just don't know as
don't
many.
Know as many.
So one of those would have to make the list. Maybe this Too Many Bones game. I've got to check this thing out. But for me, it would also be I'd have to have one CCG. Even if I didn't have anyone to play it with and I couldn't convince my wife to play it, I would just want to go through my cards and look at my collection. It changes for me what CCG is my favorite. Like Magic, Pokemon, those are always kind of staples. But right now I'm really interested in some of the anime games. I play a lot of Weiss Schwartz and Shadowverse at the moment. So it'd probably be one of them, probably Weiss. And then, I don't know, it would probably have to be like a game like Clask, some kind of physical thing that had a mobile moving component to it. So something just for me, probably my favorite CCG at the moment, some physical thing, and then probably one of the classics that my wife would always say yes to,
Scrabble or chess. So are you bilingual, Andy?
No, I speak a smattering of other languages. I can follow along in Slovakian if it's about like a meal or a holiday,
uh-huh.
sometimes about the weather or what chores we might be doing. Uh-huh. But as soon as it gets to anything like philosophy or politics or, you know, worlds of entertainment and things, I get lost.
Just politely nod your head. Yes.
Smile and nod. Smile and nod.
Well, I want to thank my guest, Andy Rogers. He's the owner of Tier 1 Cards and Games. Andy, thanks for coming in again and helping us get in the Valentine's Day spirit there.
I really appreciate the chance to come in and talk to you guys again. Thank you.
Of course. After this short break, we'll be back with a local mixologist who will tell us how to make some Valentine's Day cocktails and mocktails. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today's show is all about how to plan a date night in for Valentine's Day. Hopefully you got an idea or two from Andy at Tier 1 Cards and Games for a good game to play, and what pairs better with a game than a drink? So in the studio with me now is Morgan Jones. She runs the Mixology Mobile Bar, a beverage service that specializes in cocktails. Morgan, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you, Dave. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Before we get into any like specific drink recipes, tell me about your business. What made you want to start a mobile bar business?
So I wanted to start this business because I got involved working events and weddings. And for me, coming from just working at a bar like day to day, I got to be a part of some really unique experiences. And I realized how a drink is really a part of that experience and like somebody's story, such as like their birthday, their wedding, or
right.
Yeah. So I really thought like, okay, I want to keep recreating these experiences for people through drinks and put, you know, a lot of different unique ingredients that maybe people aren't really used to, especially like with the mocktails, and kind of bring that more into the community. And so through working all these different events, I was just ready to be able to do this and make it my own.
And so do you make the recipes yourself then?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So what are some recipes you've come up with for your business?
So my most popular recipe is a blackberry ginger fizz, and it has fresh blackberry puree and ginger ale in it. It's really good. And if you add like gin or vodka to it, it makes it, you know, a really elevated cocktail, but it's really delicious just as a mocktail too. I would say that's like my most popular simple cocktail.
It sounds great. My mouth just started watering, as a matter of fact. So I saw on your Facebook page that you cater to a lot of different events, plenty of weddings, of course. I'm sure that's a pretty big one for you. But there's also these themed events that you do, like Halloween theme or Sweet 16, mocktails, of course. But what are some events that you've hosted for your clients?
Yeah, so besides weddings, baby showers, birthday parties, a lot of 21st birthday parties, like you said. This year, I've got a lot of inquiries for 50th birthday parties. So that's something new I'll be adding to my resume.
All right.
So this is the year of people turning 50 and really wanting to celebrate it, which I love. So parties, baby showers, bridal showers, bachelorette parties, kind of anywhere where there's going to be a gathering of people and they just kind of want to have that extra social aspect. You know, a bar is really like a gathering place for people to just come and experience new things and talk and chat and just like food, you know, a drink, food and drink really brings people together. So
what does it look like when you show up to someone's place? You just show up anywhere, like the front yard or their kitchen? Like, how does it work?
That's a really good question because every event is totally different. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have an idea, okay, this is how weddings go, this is how parties go, but every single event is totally unique. So I'm rolling in with my stuff, and the first thing I do is look for the person, you know, who I need to talk to, where I need to set up, and I'm setting up from nothing to a whole bar like that, and it's pretty cool.
I'm already thinking of all the upsides of having a mobile bar as opposed to going out to the bar. Maybe that's just more my personality, I don't know, but what are some of the upsides to the mobile bar experience as opposed to going out, you know, to the bars?
I would say first and foremost, you're not drinking and driving.
Yeah.
I would say that is the most important reason. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times at these weddings, people are staying on the property. So even if I'm going out to that type of event, there's just a lot less risk involved.
Right.
Everything is safer at home or with friends, people you know, where you're not around, you know, random things. Things are more in your control. So the drinks can be exactly how you want them to be. If you like them sweeter, if you like them stronger, if you like them extra pretty, or, you know, I was making the sample of this drink we're going to make today for my boyfriend last night, and he didn't like all the garnish on the cup. So maybe some people don't like the garnish.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can really control your drinking experience by having a mobile bar, whether it's at your house for a party or at an event you're hosting. And you do save a lot of money.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. That was another thing I was thinking about. Yeah. Well, do you think mobile bars are becoming more popular?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I would say that's a trend that I'm definitely seeing, especially in the event world. Mobile bars, especially, not just like the concept of them, like they're getting really next level with like the concepts of how the bars look, like really, really cool.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got some tough competition potentially.
Definitely.
Okay. Gotta keep up on all your business model.
Yeah. Especially if you look, you know, in the other states, there's like Los Angeles and Vegas. I mean, they are doing it big with the mobile bars.
Really?
What
are some of the more elaborate things they do?
So I've seen like bars that are circular where they're like huge and round. So you literally have this like 360 degree service like in the middle of your event. Whereas, I have just like this cute light up bar from Amazon.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm actually in the process of having my own custom mobile bar being built right now.
Really?
Because I would like to elevate my setup and presentation that I bring to events.
So it's time to make a drink. Sticking with the Valentine's Day theme, what are some of your best drink recipes for like a date night?
Yeah, so for Valentine's Day, you really can't go wrong with anything like raspberry or strawberry. And I was kind of going back and forth with those two flavors as the base for the drink we're going to make today.
Mm-hmm.
I also like with a berry flavor, I also like incorporating some kind of like herbal or floral flavor. So like a basil or rose. So for today, I decided raspberry and rose would be really nice for Valentine's Day.
Perfect.
And would make a really nice date night drink too.
Okay, and you didn't bring your whole mobile bar, but you brought a mobile purse.
It looks like a bag. I brought the cutest little, this is like the least amount of supplies I've ever brought anywhere for mobile bar related things.
Yeah, yeah, so. It's just like a handbag.
And there's
yeah.
no alcohol, obviously.
All right, mocktail time.
So this is a shaker full of ice. probably a little extra ice because I wasn't exactly sure how many I was going to make. I'm just going to make one.
You're just going to make one? You got to make two. There's two of us.
Okay. So this is some freshly made lemonade. This is some organic honey. And this is some rose petal syrup. And I definitely want to shout out Adventure Harvest. They're a local company. I get a lot of my simple syrups from them. They make a lot of really amazing craft cocktail ingredients. Another local company is Full Moon Alaska. They're another company I really love getting mocktail and cocktail ingredients for. So if you're in Alaska and you're looking to make delicious drinks at home, you really can't go wrong with those companies. Ice over here. Okay, I am putting the honey in there. We are going with the rose petal syrup, some of the lemonade, and shake it really good, and also the raspberry puree in there too. Can't forget that. Okay, and then that'll be a little sweet, so you want to top it off with some club soda.
What is this drink called, Morgan?
Love on the Rocks.
Love on the Rocks. Beautiful.
And on the radio.
Okay, and the color, it is, it's not red, but it does have a pinkish hue to it. It looks a lot like lemonade. Which is the main ingredient. Yeah. But it does have a slight pink hue to it.
Yeah.
All right, well, cheers, Morgan. Thank you for the drink. I don't get to drink cocktails at work very often. That's fantastic. Oh, yeah, I love the syrup, the rose syrup.
Wow, isn't that nice?
That is really nice. And the honey, I don't know, it makes it not super floral because I actually don't like a pronounced floral drink or food.
Yeah.
But it's just a hint there and there. Very refreshing. This would be a really great summer drink.
Yeah, for sure.
Love on the Rocks, you said,
yes.
Right? Okay. So what are some of the craziest recipes you've come up with? Have you had any that you've tried and then have been total bombs or total hits?
So lately I've definitely been getting into making some of my own syrups and like making infused syrups. So like infusing thyme into like a simple syrup and stuff. So that was kind of something I wasn't, you know, I was like, okay, this could go either way. With herbs, it's such a strong flavor, right?
Right.
And it was a hit. So I actually have a chance to try out all my new recipes every month. I do a recurring pop-up at the Nave in Spinard for a local comedy improv group. So,
nice.
Yeah, I get to try out all my new recipes there, and they give me good feedback of, you know, if they like it or not. So that was one that I was like, okay, I'm not sure if this is going to turn out really well, but it was pear, thyme simple syrup, lemon, and then topped with club soda. So we called it the golden elixir.
Sounds
That's another
great.
Really good recipe.
I love that you're incorporating Alaska ingredients in there. I know that Wild Scoops, they have all these great, unique ice cream flavors, but they always use locally sourced ingredients. So like spruce tips or Moose's Tooth root beer or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that something that you try to do? Are you conscious of that and trying to do that?
Yeah. So that's actually something this summer I was really inspired to start doing. I was at a farmer's market in Homer. That's actually where I found these different brands that I was talking about. And I actually got to meet the owners and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I actually bought their spruce, this Adventure Harvest spruce tip simple syrup, and that was like the first Alaskan themed drink I was making was with their simple syrup, and I found people had a really nice feedback to that. They were like, oh, this is so cool. You know, we Alaskans really love our state here. We're very proud of it. So anytime you see that incorporated somewhere, whether, like you said, food or desserts or drinks, it touches a little place in your heart. You're like, oh, this is a little extra delicious because it's local.
It does sort of seem like a recipe for success when you incorporate as much local ingredients as possible. I think that's smart. Well, Morgan, you know, as George Thorogood famously once said, he drinks alone with nobody else. So Do you have a favorite cocktail that you like to enjoy when it's just you? So just removing the date night element, a nice quiet night alone?
So I actually don't drink, but I do have a favorite mocktail. It's one that I actually recently discovered. It's a tart cherry mocktail. And that's kind of something I've been getting into and something I could go off on a whole tangent about that we don't have time for. I've been trying to incorporate wellness mocktails into my business. So I actually did a pop-up at a gym and we did like electrolyte recovery mocktails.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So for me, I pretty much train like an athlete. So my recovery is very serious to me. So tart cherry juice has natural melatonin in it. It's a natural anti-inflammatory and a natural antioxidant. So I like to mix that up with some real cranberry juice, give it a little extra sweetness, and then top it with a ginger ale or like a lemon lime poppy. And it definitely kind of gives you those sleepy effects. So for me, that's been kind of my like go-to mocktail, but feels like a cocktail.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. What is the difference between doing, you know, a mocktail event as opposed to a cocktail? I imagine it's probably more fun to a degree if you don't have people getting, you know, super drunk around you. And, you know, you said for like a wellness event, it's like the opposite of a typical bar event, right?
Right.
So what is that difference like and which do you prefer?
Honestly, I really like them both. Mm-hmm. I would say the ones that are mocktail only are a little more high pressure because people are really paying attention to the flavors.
Yeah,
more.
Sober and the whole time.
With every drink, they're not getting just more and more delicious, you know? Like, they're actually, right. Like, it's usually an event where that is one of the main things that is presented, such as, like I said, doing the gym pop-up or me selling it as the main item on a menu for, like, a comedy show. So people are really paying attention to the flavors. So that is a little more high pressure. But then for me, it's like, okay, this is my time to shine and really take out the alcohol aspect, which, let's be real, that doesn't taste good. So then I actually get to make it my own, you know, and something that I actually get to try because, you know, I'll try some of my drinks here and there. But I personally, like I said, don't drink. So for me, I actually get to be a little more involved in those mocktail events. But I love a good party. I love a good wedding. Mm-hmm. I really think it's cool, though, that not drinking is also trending at the same time.
Sure. Have you done a lot of Valentine's Day events?
I have not.
Oh, you haven't? This is your first Valentine's Day mobile bar. I'm your first customer in that regard.
Yeah.
So do you prefer a date night in or a date night out?
I would definitely say a date night out.
All right.
As a person that spent 7 years in the service industry and is still in the service industry with this business, I also cook a lot. My idea of a good time is to not cook
not
and to go out and to shut my brain off and relax.
Such a great part of going out is not having to make your own food and not having to make your own drinks. So Morgan, was there a moment where you knew that you wanted to do this? You said you worked at a bar for a while. What happened? What made you want to do this?
So I was working at a bar and that's where I met all my first clients because they were actually customers that were going to the bar that had become friends of mine. And we joked like, oh, like, what if you bartended our wedding? And I'm like, oh, that's so amazing. And they were getting married like a year down the road, right? And then it came to be and they were like, okay, like, bartend our wedding. And then they recommended me to some of their other friends. And then some of my other friends were like, oh, you're bartending weddings this summer. You should do this person's wedding. And so without being in business, I bartended 4 weddings in one summer. And like I said, just earlier, you know, getting to see how those drinks brought people together and was such an integral part of that event, I knew I wanted to keep recreating that feeling, you know, getting to see how cool it was that people were so happy with the service that I brought and the drinks that I made for them and how that was a part of their wedding toasts and speeches and things that people still talk about to this day in their memories. And I get to be a part of that.
Very nice. So you're super busy. This is not your full-time job, mixologist. You have a Monday through Friday job, and you're doing this like on the weekends, right?
Yes.
So this is a real passion project for you.
Yes, it is. It is a passion project that has turned into this small business. And I feel very grateful to be so busy and to get to have this brand to work on every day and make it my own, which is what I always wanted. But yes, I am very busy. Mm-hmm. And some days they're it's a lot. I think about expanding my team. The whole brand is me. So if you noticed when I made the drink, I didn't measure anything. I learned to bartend by free pouring, and that is how I make the best drink. So I actually was having a hard time like writing exact ingredients down. So that's one reason why it's hard to expand and grow the team and be in more places at once. I like keeping it small and personal and intimate with the clients that I do have.
So talk about your process for when you're personalizing an event. Like what goes into that?
So all of my events are completely customizable, and that's something I've really taken pride in for my brand. So when somebody reaches out to me and they want to book my mobile bar, once we go through all the logistics of everything and we start actually getting to plan the menu, that's where the fun starts. I do have a huge recipe book of cocktails and mocktails that were all handcrafted by me, all of the recipes that I send out to all my clients. But, you know, I get a feel for their flavors, you know, whether it's a wedding, you know, what they enjoy as a couple and separately as individuals, whether it's a party, you know, what's the theme, what are we going for? I did a birthday party in January that was Northern Lights themed, and we had a color-changing drink that changed from blue to purple with butterfly PT magic. So that is like the fun. I feel like a little kid when I get to start designing all that stuff and getting to think about what goes into all of the drinks and then getting to create a custom menu, like a physical menu to put on the bar that then matches how fun and flavorful the drink is, you know, a super fun and flavorful menu too. And all of my clients get that custom experience.
Is the goal for this to be the full-time gig? It sounds like maybe it is.
That is a good question. You know, that's something I was always kind of thinking no. I think because I was maybe thinking a little small, maybe having a little bit of doubt. I'm sure every business owner, small or big, has had moments of doubt, especially as you get momentum. You're like, wait, can I do this? But wholeheartedly, yes, I would love to be able to do this full time. My bigger dream would maybe to have like my own restaurant one day where I get to bring, you know, that experience into like a brick and mortar, but still have the mocktail experience and the custom experience and lots of different flavors, and then be able to book a mobile bar too if you wanted. But definitely, my dream would be to be able to do this full time and be able to be a part of events all the time.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank my guest, Morgan Jones. She runs her business, the Mixology Mobile Bar. Morgan, thanks for coming in, making this delicious mocktail, and helping us celebrate Valentine's Day.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Thank you. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, a new local theater company is debuting their first production on Valentine's Day weekend. Anchorage's Undead Theater Company will be performing an adaptation of the classic vampire novella, Carmilla. The story predates Bram Stoker's Dracula by a quarter century. Shows are Friday the 13th at 7 p.m. and Saturday the 14th at 3 p.m. with an ASL interpreted performance at 7 p.m. in APU's Grant Hall. On a church stage flanked by two large crucifixes, a forbidden sapphic vampire romance plays out under fluorescent lights.
Carmilla, am I going to die? Please don't leave me out here alone, please. The doctor said, why did you make me love you? Is this my punishment? Are you so inconstant? Please, say something, Carmilla.
The cast and crew of Carmilla are rehearsing for their upcoming performances and locking in the finer details of their scenes.
Laura, you've been reading a folded up letter. So unfold and then you can actually read it and you don't need to call line.
Jessica Faust is the founder and creative force behind Undead Theater Company. The local artist and actor has been producing horror and gothic adjacent work for years. Directing and producing this play is a culmination of all her creative talents and relationships she's built along the way. A fan of horror literature, Faust had never read Carmilla, but a solo weekend locked away in a cabin with a book gave her the spark to bring the story to stage.
By the time I emerged from the cabin, I was like, this is either like a manic episode, like a cabin fever kind of dream that I like fantasy that I have, or I think I decided to write a play and put it on. But the things that feel so interesting to me about Carmilla is that it is so unknown. I mean, the diehards will like laugh at me when I say that, but I think a lot of people haven't read Carmilla or aren't familiar with Carmilla.
Even if they're into vampires.
Even
and
if
stuff.
They're into vampires, I'm a horror reader. I've been reading horror for pretty much as long as I've been reading, and I still had never read Carmilla. I had had a copy on the shelf. And I think probably the reasons that it's been kind of flown under the radar is the, you know, the lesbian relationship between Carmilla and Laura.
Or do you even think maybe even just the female leads
right.
type of a thing?
Yeah, like... yeah. No, the roles are complex. There's this kind of like gothic feminism going on where you're kind of going on this dreamy, it's a very lonely book. Yeah, you get this protagonist in Laura who's, something's very wrong. Something very eerie is happening to her, and it's not just that she's being visited by a vampire, it's that she's sort of trapped in her house by her father and has no friends and has no one to reach out to. And so I think of like the yellow wallpaper or other like gothic stories, and that's kind of like a lot of those type of things inspired my adaptation in how I wanted to present the story.
So you got done reading the book and you were like, oh man, I think I need to produce a play about this. Mm-hmm. But like, did you just kind of, could you see it in your mind as you were like reading the book? I feel like any project that I'm like actually like 100% behind, I'm like, it's all in my head. Like I saw it from beginning to end or something. Like, did that happen for you?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why I haven't really directed before this. This is actually my first time directing a play, but I think that I assumed that I would need to have every aspect of it figured out before I started. And just in reading plays throughout my life, I hadn't found anything that felt like, oh, I know exactly how I would do this, right? I can read a role and think, oh, I know exactly how I would play this. But I hadn't felt that way about a story until I read Carmilla. And as, you know, certain elements would happen, and I would think, how on earth could you stage a carriage crash? That seems so like impossible to put into a play. And then this shadow puppet element came in. So it was like, as I was writing it or adapting it, I was staging it in my head. So the script that I've come out with is very specific on how everything's going to work, which a lot of scripts, like, they'll just say, I was in a play recently where it was like, the character turns into the Pacific Ocean. And it doesn't tell you what or how or like how you're going to pull that off. It's like, that's the director's job. Whereas instead, when I wrote this play, I wrote exactly how I'm going to pull off each individual kind of effect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it definitely came sort of fully baked as I was reading and as I was adapting.
How many times did you end up reading the book, I guess?
Oh, man, that's hard to say. Yeah, probably 5 or 6 through, like, from beginning to end. Yeah. And then I would go back to scenes all the time as I was writing them and just sort of tumble them around a little bit and then kind of get back to work.
So tell me about the music for the show. This is a really cool idea of kind of building the vibe and the feel of the atmosphere and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I wanted like a horror movie soundtrack of like a gothic, churchy choir kind of vibe. And so I called upon Seth Eggleston to music direct this play. We have a cast of 16. And so sort of whenever individuals are not involved in the action of the scene, then they're involved in the choir. And so the choir underscores moments of horror, maybe moments of passion or romance or anything that needs that extra kind of gravitas. We have these choral moments. And so a lot of these songs are literally, you know, ancient, from medieval times, Middle Ages. And they're just pulling it off so well in order to create that vibe for the scene.
Is it the first time any of them have had to kind of do these, like, it's kind of like Latin chant type stuff? Like, has any of them done that before? Is this all new for them?
I guess I don't know the exact background, but I do know that I heard one cast member who said, like, I came out for this because I thought, oh, cool, I've never done choir and I'd like to learn. And yeah, we have them singing in Latin and German and, you know,
more like droning.
Yes. Oh, right. And, you know, it's like a 4-part harmony. So anybody who's like, you know, new to singing, it's like, well, if you're an alto, then your part goes like da, 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 you know, whatever. So they're complicated. They're complicated songs. songs, but they're pulling it off. It's going to be great.
Okay, so actually, I think the thing that piqued my interest the most is this concept of a tranquilizer-induced drug trip. So how does one translate that to the stage?
Oh, man. So
unless we're dosing the audience.
Right. So that's not in the book at all. it was sort of a... I have this phrase that I've written into the script a few times where I'm like, it becomes a music video. And of course, it doesn't actually become a music video, but it's the way that I've conveyed that I want the concept of the straight play to sort of be punctured and for it to erupt into strange sounds, strange lights, strange movements, and everything becomes kind of heightened and intense. And so the drug trip comes sort of toward the height of the horror that Laura is going through. She's been attacked in the night by a panther in her room. She's been hearing all these things about what's been happening to other girls in the village, and she's afraid she's going to die. And then the doctor comes, and of course his best remedy is by just drugging her. So he gives her some tranquilizer, and what happens after that is part shadow puppetry, part ballet. There's definitely musical elements. There are lights that come out. I call it like the starlight dance, because all these dancers come out with these glowing orbs and move around Laura. And so I think it's going to be pretty spectacular. I think it's going to be pretty wild to see, but just to sort of create this chaos in Laura's mind and this disorientation that she's going through.
Yeah, well, I mean, that does seem like to be relevant to, like, the Victorian age or whatever, because as far as I know, that was kind of the solution for dealing with women in general.
Yeah.
So, oh, you're having trouble. Okay, well, we'll sedate you.
Yes, yes. Just send her to the seaside. And
God. Okay, but you mentioned the use of shadow puppets. Tell me a little bit about that, because it sounds like you found somebody that could come help you kind of figure out the whole puppetry aspect. And yeah, how did that work?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to do shadow puppetry from the very beginning. And so as I started researching and just sort of rolling this idea around of shadow puppetry, I came across the name of a woman in Fairbanks named Maite Agopian, and she does puppetry out of Fairbanks. She's from Switzerland originally, and I really just kind of cold called her and asked if she would come to Anchorage to do a 3-day puppetry workshop with the cast. And so she came back in December and taught us all the basics of shadow. And we were able to, while she was in town, create sort of what I was calling like the skeleton of the show, the skeleton of the shadow puppets. So we were using things that we were making in the moment, you know, making a little carriage in the moment and saying, okay, this is the carriage for the carriage crash, but it'll be better later on. We're just going to use this now so we can start to sort of storyboard it. So she was just so great for training us all up. And then we would start doing a thing and she would just like hand us objects. You know, at one point she just like handed someone a disco ball, handed someone a piece of cellophane or a jar, and is having us shine the lights through the jar, which makes it kind of bend and refract and things like that. Or I asked her, the disco ball came into play when I said, can we make snow? And she just pointed it at a disco ball and slowly twirled it, and suddenly it was snowing all around the room. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the cheapest idea anyone.
Why not?
For the snow effect. And I love it.
Much less to clean up afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you had to coordinate stage fights before?
I have only had to participate in combat before. I've done a few shows where I was either sword fighting or hand-to-hand combat at Cyrano's. And so one of my choreographers from those productions, Nick Lynch, I brought on board as our fight coordinator for this show. So we had kind of a long coffee, and I loved all the questions that he brought in, what everyone's motivations are and what's going through their minds in these fights. And so it was a really kind of an ethereal conversation, right?
You're talking about combat, yes. But like what's going on in their brains?
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right? And so we sort of nailed down all those motivations, and then he brought in some choreo and we worked on it.
That's got to be fun for the cast to kind of start doing, right?
Yeah, no, it's really fun. I think it can create some anxiety if you're not sure if you're going to be good or if it's going going to work out. But if you have a coordinator who's like working with you and what feels good in your body, then yeah, it ends up being really, really fun.
Just trust your partner too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So with the costumes getting provided, can you talk about that? Sounds like, you know, local help from local store.
Yeah, I am so excited about the costumes. I brought on Nessa Nouveau, who owns the local vintage shop Penny Royalty, to design our costumes. And then we also have this amazing opportunity to use some costumes from TBA Theater. Mm. So sort of with those powers combined, this show is going to be so dreamy and beautiful. Nessa's been putting together a lot of looks with things from her own shop or from her own wardrobe, and then having just this like very, very vast log of costumes from TBA Theater. I think it's going to be very, very fashionable. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think it will feel like a fashion show watching it, which is just adding to kind of the richness of the world. Yeah. And the time period.
Speaking of like borrowing costumes, I mean, how would you describe maybe as a upcoming brand new theater company, like the kind of relationship between other existing theater companies in town?
Yeah, I have to say this play would not be happening without the help of other theater companies. I have like our audition space was at Midnight Sun Theater. We did our puppet workshop at TBA Theater. We just did our fight rehearsal at Cyrano's. We've done rehearsals at Christ Community Church. Dawson Moore has been lending us his home for a lot of our rehearsals. So the relationships that I have made over the past, you know, 25 plus years in acting in the community, all those friendships have been really showing up and helping out in order to help me make this come to life. And so that's been amazing. We're borrowing lights from TBA Theater. Everybody really is like pitching in to help me see this through. And so, yeah, there's no world where I could have done this on this budget without purchasing a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to give any like cast shout outs or anything? I know we've kind of talked about some of the crew and stuff and their contributions. Would you like to, you know, mention any of the?
Yeah. So the title role, Carmilla, will be played by a dear friend of mine, Lauren Stanford. And then Laura will be a debut performance by Rizelle Cartasiano. This will be her first play. So that's pretty amazing. I really just got to cast all my buddies in this. So
why start a theater company if you can't have that kind of control, right?
Yeah, my sister plays a small part. She's coming in from Montana to come and be part of this. My friend Jesse, who lives in Jesse Oliva, who lives in San Francisco, he's coming in to play the role of General Spielsdorf, kind of the villain of the show. We've got Ryan Buin as the Baron, Stephanie Buin as the mother. A really, really incredible cast of mostly really seasoned actors, and then a few like new faces who are bringing all kinds of fun energy into the cast. I feel really blessed.
That was my conversation with Jessica Faust. She's the founder and creative force behind Anchorage's new Undead Theater Company. Their first production is the vampire story Carmilla. Shows are Friday the 13th at 7 p.m. and Saturday the 14th at 3 p.m. with an ASL interpreted performance at 7 p.m. in APU's Grant Hall. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guests Andy Rogers and Morgan Jones. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.